All right, good afternoon, Tucson. This is Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. He's out of town for his anniversary with his wife, and he'll be back after the Memorial Day weekend. So another week without Bill next week, but it's going to be fun. We have a lot of stuff to talk about here today, and we'll continue providing you with the great shows that we do. If you want to listen live on the internet or to the podcast or anything like that, go to buckmastershow.com. You can also go to kvoi.com for more details and more information. Today on the show at the half hour, we're going to be joined by David Coulier, the director and associate professor at the University of Arizona School of Journalism. And right now we are joined by Hank Amos and Pat Darcy. Hank Amos, the president and CEO of Tucson Realty and Trust, and Pat Darcy, the head of retail there. How you guys doing?
Doing fine, yeah.
Great, thank you.
Good, good. I want to get right up on that mic there. So we're going to talk about retail in America today. It's an interesting topic. People are kind of, you know, always talking about it because the internet has presented so many interesting, you know, problems, but also solutions for things, right? I mean, Amazon's one of those big culprits, right?
Exactly. And it's interesting that, we're having this discussion today, too, because I was at the Pima County Real Estate Research Council meeting this morning, and, the whole topic was about retail. And they handed some quotes that I'd like to read a couple of them to you to kind of set the tone, because it covers all the things that we're talking about, and, we can kind of go from there. But this was from Scott Plasky, who's with Marcus & Millichap. And he says, what we're seeing today is a recasting of shopping behavior that is permanent and not tied to an economic market. It is millennials who are shifting consumer preferences from goods to travel and experience. Kids aren't shopping as much because they live in small places and their guru wears a hoodie instead of a work to go to work with a tie. Millennials don't have cars. They have zip cars and, Ubering. And it's all over the place. And they don't need garages, so they don't need the tools in their garage. This is having a gigantic effect. It's a trend. We're in a different era.
Wow.
Then from shopping centers today, according to Bloomberg News, which cites internal Amazon documents, Amazon is planning a national rollout of grocery stores. It could ultimately open as many as 2,000 stores in one format or another. Also from shopping centers today, in the U.S., Walmart has gone from building 230 new stores in 2015 to 130 new stores last year to 55 this year.
Wow.
Commercial Investment Real Estate Journal mentioned a couple quotes. The shortest distance from the store to your kitchen is the Echo device or Google Home.
Oh, man.
Home Depot reports that 40% of its online purchases are being picked up in a store. And from Shopping Center Business, the best retailers today rely more on an omni-channel strategy to have online sales plus really exciting websites and strong word of mouth. They're still going to need brick-and-mortar stores, and they're going to concentrate in those urban markets where they can capitalize on eyeballs and street visibility. It won't be next to a 100,000-square-foot box in the suburbs.
Wow.
Last couple. More than 13% of total retail sales are currently conducted online. And actually, we know that 90% people that buy go online before they do.
Wow.
Wells Fargo Bank, when you're ordering online, it effectively exports capital from your community, and that capital is not likely to return, and thus erodes the velocity of money circulating in your community. You don't think about that. So those are some of the things that we talked about. It's also what they talk about, an experience. You can do aerobics at home watching a videotape instructor for free, or you go to Orange Theory at 6 o'clock and pay $29 for a one-hour class. There'll be 70 people in that class. Why not exercise from home? Because people want to be part of a community. They want a sense of place.
And, you know, as Hank was saying, online sales make up right now 8.3% of retail sales. So they got a ways to go. They're coming on. And he mentioned Amazon with, you know, they're opening up the new grocery stores next year in the Houston area.
Yeah.
They already have bookstores up in Oregon and Washington. So, you know, people, they need that brick and mortar. You know, you can have online sales, but people want to go out there and shop and, you know, feel things, the clothing or look at things, whatever. And that's going to continue.
Well, let's talk about what you were talking about, you know, the omni-channel retail. or the omnichannel method, I think is more would be a better way of saying it, or what I would say is the multi-channel way. Can you explain to the listener what exactly that is? Because I think I understand it properly, but maybe they need a little more explanation.
So the omnichannel is what's happening in the old days. It was just bricks and mortar. You would go to the store and you'd buy what you want. And then what's happening now is there's more of different ways in which people are purchasing their goods. So they're either going to the store, or they're ordering online, or they're looking at what they want online, and then they're coming to the store, or they're using a mobile phone app to do their order. So they're looking at different things. And so it's now called omni-channeling. We could talk about what's happened, like 7% in 2015 were online shoppers, and 20% were store shoppers only, and 73% use multiple channels.
Yeah. So. Well, and just to give you an idea of how large the e-commerce industry is, I had sent you guys an article from the New York Times, and the kind of crux of it was from April, I think. It said, is American retail at a historic tipping point? And I think we can all say that it is. You just kind of alluded to it with those quotes that you read. But they said between 2010 and 2014, e-commerce grew by an average of $30 billion annually. And over the past 3 years, an average annual growth increased to $40 billion. So it's a gigantic industry.
Right. Well, the companies, the retailers that are struggling, Sears, JCPenney, Kmart, Macy's, they didn't adjust. They didn't make adjustments. You look at when Costco first opened here, how they've changed, how they've evolved, all the things they've added to that. Quick Trip is another good company, which started out as a gas station. Now, they even since they've been in Tucson, besides having the C store, now they have a kitchen there. You can have pizza, ice cream. You have to make adjustments to be successful, and those big companies like Sears did not do that.
So they're really just relying on an old model that doesn't work anymore.
You got to change with the times, and they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And what you're going to see are companies like Macy's is already doing. They're downsizing their footprint. So they might have had 100,000 square feet, and now they might go down to like 15,000 square feet. They're going to have more of a online presence, but they're still going to have some bricks and mortars and all. So I think you're going to see the shrinkage.
So let's talk about the downsizing. Sure. Some of the stuff that I was reading and researching for this said that basically we have oversaturation of retail. There's too much, really. Too much space. There's just too much square footage. There was an article on this website, Seeking Alpha, that said CoStar Realty is saying that in 2016 there were 2,353 square feet of retail in shopping centers for every 100 Americans, compared to 1,636 in Canada. So we have a lot of retail.
In Tucson too, we got 1 million square feet. We're oversupplied. 70% of that is those neighborhood centers, and 30% of that is basically those power centers.
Wow.
Yeah, what they used to do in Tucson, when I first started here, you'd have a grocery store go in, a Smith's was not here anymore, or Lucky's was not here anymore, but they would sign a lease for 40, 50,000 square feet, and the developer would build like 40, 50,000 square feet of shop space. Now, they phase that in. You got to get things pre-leased. And like Houghton Town Center is a perfect example of that. Walmart went there, then they started putting retail on pads, like four or five retailers on a pad site, but they had to get those pre-leased before they would start construction. So that's been a big change now of they have to wait. They're not going to build shop space without tenants already, at leases being signed.
Interesting. Now tell me, what will happen to that space that's not being used? What becomes of it?
So right now, that's what's happening. And as developers develop or buy existing product, right, they're trying to Amazon-proof their center a little bit. And so they're looking more at restaurants kind of going in there. And maybe, the health club or other tenants that more Amazon proof, that it's not going to be part of.
So they're destinations where you get to do something.
Well, yes, because there's still that experience of community that people like to have.
Yeah.
But you got to look at, see where the world's going, because Amazon is definitely having a huge impact. I mean, look, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was up in Phoenix, and their secretary needed to get a product, but she didn't want to. She didn't have time to go all the way across town and then get back.
Yeah.
So she made the phone call, and 25 minutes later, that product was delivered.
Wow. And then does that have to do in part to because of these Amazon shops? They have warehouses where things are just kind of waiting for people to order them.
Right. We don't have that experience quite as much here in Tucson, but it's coming.
Because it's a smaller market.
Yeah.
But what do you think? In Phoenix, is that an option more?
Well, Phoenix is such a big, big area, all the different cities up there. So a lot different than Tucson. And we talked about how much, retail space is in Tucson. And a lot of it's older retail space on Broadway, Speedway, Grant. Mm-hmm. And so these are obsolete spaces. What you're seeing now is you're seeing developers coming in and assembling two or three properties, tearing everything down and building something new, which is good.
Or you can see what Bourne's doing near I-10 and Valencia. I can't remember the name of the shopping center that he's out there that they purchased. But the old way used to be you'd have all this, big store, big tenant, and then you'd have all this inline space that kind of wraps around it.
Yeah.
And so on his development, he's taking a lot of the frontage along I-10 there and putting, pads. He's got like 10, 12 pads out there where he's got a single tenant for each one that has a little bit more space. So you're seeing the design a little bit different.
Yeah.
You're seeing the tenant mix being designed a little bit different. And people are more concerned about making sure they're Amazon proof, as they move forward.
Interesting. Let's go to the phones now. Lauren has called in, wants to talk about restaurants. Lauren, what do you got for us?
Hey, hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Let me speak of an anomaly, and when I say anomaly, I mean you just said that word. What are we going to do with these spaces? And you mentioned the word restaurant, and it just struck me. I don't know if you guys are the least bit familiar with the Tohono O'odham swap meet. It's down at Mission and Drexel. We have two swap meets in Tucson. Everybody talks about Tankaverde swap meet, but let me clue you in, and I'll. Not so secret. The Tohono O'odham swap meet is my favorite swap meet. I've known about it for 25 or so years.
Okay.
When you talk about restaurant space, that little enclave down there, which is like kind of like an old-time frontier town, and I know it's on the reservation, and I know it's not necessarily Pima County or City of Tucson, but that place has more restaurant space per 100 square feet or 1,000 square feet than any place in existence.
And so you're saying that people want to go there to eat and shop?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mind blower. If you go down there like I have been for so long and you come to the realization, more people probably go there because of the food. And I thought, okay, what if you remove food or restaurants from the equation? And you guys were talking about restaurants.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Lauren, for the call. I think we want to get into that. We have to go to a break here now, but I think we want to get into that after the break where we talk kind of about the experience of everything and how things are changing so that experience is almost more important than the than what's there. People want community, especially millennials. And so we'll talk about that after the break here. Here on the Buckmaster Show, we'll be right back after this. AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library, where your new favorite book is waiting for you. At librarypima.gov, we have hundreds of free activities, programs, and special events just for kids May 20th through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or librarypima.gov to find out how.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, and we're always on buckmastershow.com.
All right, 12:21 after the hour. This is Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Buckmaster on the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented to you by Green Things, located at 3384 East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. If you want to check out Green Things' 13-acre property for all of your gardening and green things, visit greenthingsaz.com or check them out. All right, we are back with Hank Amos and Pat Darcy, both from Tucson Realty and Trust. Thanks, guys, for coming on. Now we're going to talk a little bit more about the experience of going somewhere. It used to be that you would go somewhere, get something, and leave. Now it has to be more. Explain that to me.
Well, I mean, you could look at different, you know, stores people are used to in Tucson.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Costco. I mean, it's jammed. They're always giving stuff away, you know, samples of things. And you see people you know, and they have the employees there or have been there for years.
Yeah.
So you get to know some of them. That's a key thing. You don't have that changing of employees all the time. You know, they have, it's a good company to work for.
Mm-hmm.
They take care of their employees, and they're really knowledgeable when you ask them questions, where things are, what, you know, what's going on.
Exactly.
You know, the consumer's evolving. Mm-hmm. You know, they expect the brand to know them.
Mm-hmm.
They want a relationship with that brand, and they expect a seamless multi-channel interaction.
Yeah.
So in other words, you know, web browsing, or they call it web grooming, where you shop online and then you purchase in the store,
mm-hmm.
that's 66% of all sales right
now.
Wow. Or showrooming, where you shop in the store and then you purchase online. That's 50% of, you know.
From the same company or different companies?
Different companies.
And they have to compete for that. And that's kind of, well, that's an interesting aspect of it, because the traditional model was you have a salesperson that makes a commission off a sale.
Yeah.
That is not
that's
happening
bad.
Now.
That's not good. Yeah. Really, somebody comes in and, you know, ask the guy all the questions, the sales clerk, and then they say, okay, see you later. They go buy it online.
For cheaper.
Not the right way you want to do it, though. Really.
Exactly.
Or they click and collect.
Yeah.
You know, and that means they buy online and they pick it up at the store.
Wow.
So, yeah. That's how it's all evolving right now.
So let's bring it back to the experience. You were telling me earlier that millennials in particular want experience because they want a sense of community. Explain that to me, because there's a problem and this may be the solution.
So What we're understanding right now is millennials these days, the younger generation, They're on their smartphones all the time, yeah. and they're not interacting as much with people. And so you see studies where, you know, folks are getting more depressed. You know, mm-hmm. England has that maybe more than the United States. And so they're looking for where they can interact and all. And so when, you know, we talked about earlier that one quote where, why would I want to work out at home when I can go to Orange Theory
exactly.
and be with a community? And you're seeing residential developments, more so like in Texas and some places, where they're putting a residential community, but they kind of like put a small town, you know, think yeah. 1915 or, yeah. you know, 1920, right? Small town where you have the ice cream store, a couple restaurants, your laundromat, and that small town. So there's a small sense of community, and those things are really selling. You were talking about one that you knew up
yeah,
in Phoenix.
There's some that are up in Scottsdale. My dad's a builder up there, and he was telling me about these different, you know, giant condo complexes that have parking garages, and then they also have retail on the bottom and then living space on the top. And it's like you can just do everything in one little spot, you know?
Well, and you look at downtown Tucson. Mm-hmm. So there's a big movement to live down there because that's where yeah. the action is.
Exactly.
A lot of these guys don't have cars, so they can just, you know, live there and then, and work in a small urban environment.
Live, work, and play in the same space. Let's
right. Yeah, and you look at, you know, you talk about downtown Tucson. Yeah. There is more residential going in down there. But all, but the fastest growing areas right now in southern Arizona are Marana and Vail and Corona de Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
So people, but they can work out the Tucson, you know, they have the park out there, the tech park out there. So it's a mixture there, what's going yeah. on. So, but some of the millennials want to be downtown, but then you got most people, you know, like Marana, Miller's doing a good job too with their, how they're making their future development, they're planning for that.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things. First of all, we are talking about the younger generation, mm-hmm. and I'm part of that. And I think I can associate with the idea of wanting to have, you know, less interaction with my car. It's stressful to drive. And younger people do want to move to downtown areas where they can just walk places and not have to go very far. Do you think that that could make up for some of the losses in the retail area when you're starting to open up these shops, restaurants, and other stores in more urban areas?
I think restaurants, you know, restaurants seem to be doing okay down in Tucson, yeah. but there's a lot of restaurants, and there's only so many people down there right now.
And
so,
almost too many.
Exactly, exactly. They know the retailers yeah. down there. And I think when the growth starts coming in more, you're going to see more national chains coming into Tucson.
Yeah.
That's when you know things have turned around.
Exactly. That's interesting. Now, another aspect of this, when it comes to Tucson, Southern Arizona in particular, is our proximity to the border. We were talking off the air that it's interesting when I was reading these articles, a lot of the complaints or the issues were really heavily focused maybe in the Midwest or some of these areas that are just not doing very well in middle America. But I think Tucson is uniquely situated to have a built-in market next to Mexico, are we not?
Correct. But there's a couple things that kind of go with that, and I'll kind of get in the statistics here a little bit.
Yeah.
In order for Tucson to succeed, we need to be a pro-business, pro-growth community.
Okay.
We had those policies that weren't that wasn't the case maybe in the late 80s and the 90s and parts of the 2000s, and we've kind of changed that a little bit, and so
yeah.
you're starting to see the effects of, you know, Raytheon and Caterpillar and Comcast and other home goods that have come to our community. So you have to have that vitality and that velocity of jobs and people coming to help your retail experience and all. But
mm-hmm.
getting into Mexico, that helps out too. It's a $1.5 billion industry
wow.
here in mm-hmm. Tucson. And right now Hispanics make almost 40% mm-hmm. of our population. So it's really important to encourage that trade and to have that trade.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have a good relationship with Mexico, too. That's one of our key partners, trading partners.
Of course.
And that's what we need. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you guys seeing, you know, with that, are you seeing any negatives or positives recently given the maybe strains that we might see in the relationship mm-hmm. with Mexico?
You mean build that wall?
I'm just asking the question.
We are seeing it. Yeah, it is happening some, yes.
And is it affecting monetarily the Tucson area at all, do you think?
I think it's protecting, you know, Arizona.
Mm, wow. That's kind of discouraging a little bit because it's we need that money to come into the Tucson area.
Well, the good news is after that House Bill 10-something, I can't remember
yeah.
what it was, a few years ago.
Oh, SB 1070?
SB 1070, that's
yeah,
right. So, that had a really negative effect. The good news is the governor of Arizona has really been going down to Mexico a lot. Juan Sisgamani.
Yeah, Juan Sisgamani has a really good relationship over there.
He's got a great relationship. They've been meeting with Claudia, and they're building that relationship. So they Mexico kind of gets it a little bit.
Yeah.
But there are people that are a little discouraged about coming over, and I might get detained or whatever. But I think long term we're going to be okay.
I think so too, and I think the governor kind of understands that as well.
Oh, he gets it.
Yeah, he definitely wants Southern Arizona specifically to thrive, which is encouraging. Don't really see that very often.
Yeah,
especially with guys that live up there in Phoenix. Well, really appreciate you guys coming on the show today to talk about retail. It's fascinating subject that I think we're going to be talking about for a lot longer. So,
thank you for having us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
Yeah, no problem. Hank Amos, Pat Darcy from Tucson Realty and Trust Company. We'll be right back after this. Going to be talking about journalism in America. Stay tuned to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Ray Allen, filling in for Bill. Be back.
Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant. Named after the classic New Orleans cocktail, Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Phillips Plaza. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. You'll read stories from around the world ignored by the mainstream media. Stories from the Gatestone Institute, the Washington Free Beacon, the Washington Times News Service, and other great outlets. It is world news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. The excitement is building for the grand opening in 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive.
All right, good afternoon, Tucson. 12:34 on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill, probably sitting on some island somewhere enjoying his time. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented to you by Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. New Mexico is just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, like exploring their historic downtown and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and the great places to stay, you'll want to visit southwestnewmexico.org. All right, joined now by David Coulier, the director and associate professor at the University of Arizona School of Journalism. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. A lot of stuff happening in the news lately. It's fun to work here. I'll be honest with you, because there's just so much.
It's a crazy time right now. It's phenomenal.
It is, and it's good because we get people that like to listen to this news radio and the news, and it helps us out. So we enjoy it. We're going to talk kind of about journalism and media here for the next 25 minutes or so. I want to start out by talking about the news cycle specifically, because it's so fast these days. It used to be, 10 years ago when I kind of started here, it used to be that you could kind of see the news cycle for about a week. But now it's hours, maybe, less than an hour. It depends on the day. But Monday and Tuesday of this week, the news cycle was shifting so quick that you could hardly keep up.
Oh, I've never seen it like this before. I don't know how the average person keeps up with it, let alone the journalists out there. It's crazy.
You can't, and the only way I think you can is if you're just on Twitter all the time.
Right. If you have no job,
yeah,
and nothing else to do with your life, you might be able to keep up with some of it.
Yeah, and just sit there watching Twitter as it comes down. And technology in large measure is kind of to blame, I guess. It's part of the reason, right? I mean, with the advent of Twitter and new media, that is definitely a culprit, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the media model now is completely online and in social media. The print product, the newspaper, that thing we used to call newspaper, is taking a back seat to the online world. And newsrooms have shifted their resources to serve that. That's why they just work all day, just crank it out online.
Exactly. Now tell me, you're a professor. You deal with journalism. How do you prepare a student for this kind of news cycle?
Well, it's really challenging, because not only do we have to teach them the basics, how to write, report, law, ethics, all the fundamentals, but we also have to layer on this multimedia stuff, tools, the Twitter, the Facebook, the video, audio, all sorts of different tools that they have to learn, and they're required to learn now in addition to the fundamentals. So they have to know a lot more than I ever did when I went to college.
Yeah, so it's kind of a challenge, but at the same time, it makes it more fun, I think, in some aspects.
I mean, I think there are some advantages to it. I mean, people don't have to wait a day to find out what happened in the world. They can find out immediately.
Exactly.
That's kind of neat.
But that does also create sort of a volatile space, does it not? I mean, we are kind of in like a wild, wild west period of journalism news, right? Because nothing is really solidified.
Oh, right. And it's had some negative effects. I mean,
of course.
With everybody scrambling, you have a lot of folks just copying each other, frankly, and rewriting a story that goes online and often getting it wrong, just like the game Telephone.
Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of errors come out because people aren't taking the time to double check and verify.
Well, let's talk about that, because a lot of what I see, is that, but there's also this desire to be first reporting something. That was, it's always been there in the news. Everyone wants to have the breaking story, wants to have the leading story and be ahead of the competition, and that's fine. But it seems like nowadays the desire to be first has created an atmosphere where people will just be first and get it wrong.
Yeah.
And that seems unethical and wrong to me from a journalistic perspective.
Well, it is. It is. And the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics addresses that. I mean, the primary purpose of journalism is to seek the truth and report it.
Yeah.
And should not let that competitive, to the second, trying to beat your competitor by the second,
exactly,
get in the way of that. I mean, the first priority is to get it right.
Well, so I want to talk about that because the atmosphere nowadays is so caustic and hyperbolic. Would you agree with that to a degree?
Oh, yeah. Boy, I mean, this country's in a tizzy right now. Mm-hmm. It's contentious. It's a little disturbing, frankly. I mean,
yeah.
People, we're not getting along like we should as Americans.
No, exactly.
And it's pervasive everywhere. It's kind of a problem.
So how does a journalist or a news organization keep from being swayed in a climate like that?
Well, I mean, I think journalists who are trained professionally, mm-hmm, and adhere to the code of ethics and work hard, and I think that's the majority of journalists.
Yeah.
I think they do their best at, mm-hmm, trying to stay as objective as they can and take a look and look at different viewpoints. I think there's still a lot of good journalists out there trying to do that.
Yeah. So earlier on in the week, Monday and Tuesday were crazy news days, and a lot of people were just astounded by the amount of news that was coming out Monday and Tuesday, with the Washington Times story breaking Monday and then the New York Times story breaking on Tuesday. I want to talk a little bit about anonymous sources because I've seen that being debated on Twitter a lot between people who are saying, anonymous sources aren't credible. Tell me a little bit about how important an anonymous source is to a journalist.
Well, it depends. I mean, for most journalists across the country, they don't use anonymous sources. I mean, most news outlets don't allow them, except in extremely rare circumstances. Now, in D.C., it's another story. Mm-hmm. I mean, D.C. is just how it works.
Okay.
And there's a lot of discussions of that in journalism, a lot of debate over that. The reality is in D.C., it's just become the norm. And anonymous sources are critical in our history. I mean, there are a lot of people who just can't come forward. But we'll talk to a journalist if they're promised confidentiality. So, and a lot of important stories have emerged to help the public because of them. So they're really critical. It has to be handled right.
Exactly. So as a professor, what do you tell your students about sourcing? The ethical responsibility of a journalist is it first and foremost to try and get a source that is reliable and upfront and not anonymous?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the first thing. You go talk to your boss. Your boss may not let you have an anonymous source.
Of course.
You vet the source. You figure out, where is this person getting the information from? And you make them show you.
Yeah.
You just don't take their word for it. You also look at their motives. I think that's really important. You figure out what axe do they have to grind.
Of course.
And then you try to see if you can get the information elsewhere. A lot of sources will come forward to journalists and say, hey, I don't want my name out there. I don't really want to tell you, but go request this document. You might find something.
Yeah.
They might point you to sources you can cite that are credible. So there are a lot of different ways of handling this, but the bottom line is getting at the truth. I mean, that's what it's all about. And hopefully you can get that. Now, some journalists have been burned by anonymous sources, Dan Rather being one in particular, lost his job over a bad anonymous source. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be really diligent. Your career is at stake.
Now, as a consumer of media, and for the listeners out there, they're consumers, they're listening now, and they're taking all this in. But as people who have to consume these different stories from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other places, should we take something that we're given from an anonymous source with a grain of salt?
Well, I think everybody should take everything with a grain of salt.
It makes sense.
You know, I mean, what I tell my students is if your mother says she loves you, check it out. I mean, you can't believe anything. You have to triangulate and vet and all that. So, yeah, I mean, anytime anyone sees any story, with named sources or anonymous sources, they need to be critical.
Skeptical,
yeah. I mean, and take it all in and look at different media and take a look. I mean, every day, you know, first thing I do is I look at the New York Times, Washington Post, Fox News, CNN, other news sources. I just take it all in and get a sense of kind of what's going on.
You think
there.
That we would be a better informed but also a better country in general if everyone took every source in as opposed to just the ones that they wanted?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want to get a variety of different perspectives and viewpoints. And
there's ways that you can do that with news aggregators and stuff like that, correct?
Yeah, and that is one of the benefits of technology today.
Exactly. I want to hit on something that's happening here in Arizona. Senate Bill 1384 passed the Senate, passed the House, and is probably going to be sent to the governor's desk. It's essentially a bill that limits high school and college administrations or limits the role that the administration can play when students are publishing the newspaper. What do you think about this bill? Is it something that's good? This affects you. Is it something that's bad?
Oh, I think this is good for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was much needed legislation because over the decades, it's gotten to where principals and university administrators have felt that like they could punish and censor students for just merely writing things that oppose their political ideology or that criticize the principal or and that's just not good. We don't want to raise a generation of sheep who are afraid to question authority. And we need to give students the right to practice journalism responsibly, but in the way that our founding fathers intended. That is to hold those in power accountable. And that's what that legislation did.
And that's good.
All right, if it's signed by the governor.
I think it will be. Now, that leads us into a broader conversation about the First Amendment. And as a professor, as someone who is on a college campus, do you think that the First Amendment is, I wouldn't say under attack, but do you think that it's being hindered? You know, we've seen a lot of people that go to speak at these college campuses and they get yelled down, they get pushed out, they get threatened with violence. Is the First Amendment maybe under attack?
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of confusion about all these issues, including SB 1384, by the way. A lot of misinformation and misunderstandings about how all this works and the First Amendment. And, all the First Amendment says is the government can't tell you how to what you can say or not say. You know? And it allows us, all of us, to speak out and criticize the government if we choose,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of countries, the citizens don't enjoy that right. So,
So
that's what it does. It doesn't protect people from being abusive or stopping other people's right to speak. So, it's really unfortunate that we see people yelling and shouting down others who are trying to express themselves. There are better ways of expressing your own views, and stopping someone else's views is not the answer. And regarding this legislation, I know there were some folks critical of it because they thought, well, liberal teachers would let students run amok and publish anything they wanted, but that's not it at all. And that we'd give students, high school students, the right to do anything they wanted. And that's not what the legislation does at all. But they still are monitored by advisors, graded. They still have to adhere to basic fundamental journalism ethics.
Yeah, and what I thought was interesting is that there was kind of concern from both sides of the of the political spectrum.
Republicans and Democrats opposed it in the House in some ways. And again, misinformation, misunderstanding.
Yeah.
It was really kind of interesting how that all erupted because it doesn't matter what party you are. If you believe that people should be able to criticize those in power, then it's okay. Now, there were limits to that. Some people were saying, well, we're giving students the same right as professional journalists, and that was simply not true. Professional journalists can't be censored or punished by the mayor of Tucson for simply disrupting city activities or whatever. So, you know, the time that I see Tim Steller put in jail by Mayor Rothschild or Chuck Huckleberry, would, you know, that's never going to happen.
No.
Or punished or censored. And high school students can still be censored and punished under this law if it's passed. So, a lot of misunderstandings, and it's complicated, so I get it.
Talking with Professor David Cuellar, the director and associate professor at University of Arizona School of Journalism. Take a break right now on the Buckmaster Show. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the media industry and what's happening with some trends that are happening here in America in general. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library, where your new favorite book is waiting for you. At librarypima.gov, we have hundreds of free activities, programs, and special events just for kids May 20th through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or librarypima.gov to find out how. Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
All right, 12:52 on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for Bill Buckmaster. Right now, speaking with David Cuellar, the director and associate professor at the University of Arizona School of Journalism. We were talking about media and how it's all the craziness of it all. I want to look at the issue of the election again. I don't want to drudge up the politics of it, but I want to look at industry trends. I had sent you an article from Politico.com that was back in April, I think, is when it came out. It said the media bubble is worse than you think. And it was actually a really kind of discouraging thing. I want to quote part of it for you and then have you react to that. It said the newspaper industry has jettisoned hundreds of thousands of jobs due to failing advertising revenues. Dailies have shrunk sections, pages, and features. Some have retreated from daily publications. Hundreds have closed. Daily and weekly newspaper publishers employed about 455,000 reporters, clerks, salespeople, designers, and the like in 1990. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, by January of 2017, that workforce had halved to 173,900. Now, the crux of this article is right here. It says, this isn't just a shift in medium, it's a shift in sociopolitics, a radical one, where newspaper jobs are spread nationwide, internet jobs are not. Today, 73% of all internet publishing jobs are concentrated in either the Boston, New York, Washington, Richmond corridor or the West Coast Crescent that runs from Seattle to San Diego and on to Phoenix. Chicagoland area, a traditional media center, captures 5% of the jobs, with a paltry 22% going to the rest of the country. And almost all of the real growth of internet publishing has happened outside the heartland in just a few urban counties, all that voted for Clinton. So when your conservative friends use the media as a synonym for coastal or liberal, they're not far off the mark. The crux is of this article is that there's almost no representation from middle America in the media because of the loss of newspapers, really.
Well, it's true that the legacy media have it went huge cuts over the past 30 years.
I mean,
cut in half, minimum, still declining. Even more layoffs with Gannett just last month.
It
just continues to spiral down. So that's absolutely true. It's also true that a lot of the jobs have been made up with online media jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question with this article is the nature of the different jobs. They're right that those jobs are centered more on the coast, not in middle America. But how much impact do those jobs have? Who are those folks working in online? There are some folks that have a lot of impact online, but for the most part, the legacy media actually still have more impact.
They do, yeah.
And I mean, who has more impact in Tucson, the Arizona Daily Star, or Dylan would hate me for saying this, the Tucson Sentinel?
Yeah.
I think Dylan does a great job, but the legacy media still have impact.
A very big impact.
Right. So I think we're going through a shift, and it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves. Definitely, we have a huge problem in this country with cuts in newsrooms, and it's quite severe, and it's at all levels of the news industry.
Yeah, that's kind of sad. I think one of the questions that I have is is it financially viable for larger organizations to represent people in the middle America, or is it not? That might be part of it?
Well, and again, the legacy media have been cut, slashed everywhere.
Yeah.
In
LA,
New York City. And the jobs shifting to these kind of online startups.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure if they get a lot of readership yet. But I think middle America still has representation. I mean, the bulk of journalists in this country work in middle America.
Yeah.
There are about 40,000 news employees in this country, and by far most of those work in Montana, Utah,
Iowa, places
Indiana,
like that.
Arizona. I mean, the so-called elite media in D.C. and New York,
yeah.
I mean, it's just a smidget of. Now, they have a lot of impact.
A lot of power.
A lot of influence.
But
it's a problem throughout journalism,
It's
countrywide.
So we have a minute left. The school year just ended for you. You're going to go into summer classes. Are you encouraged by the students that you have in your classes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, shoot, we have so many great students who are passionate about doing this, about getting news to people and holding government accountable. And they're going out and they're actually getting really cool jobs and they're doing great work. So no, I'm hopeful for the future, but we have a lot of things we have to work out as an industry and as a country.
Yeah, you're right. And a lot of work ahead of us to try and make things, you know, a little bit more solidified, a little bit more normal than they have been recently.
Well, it'd be nice if we could work together. You know, and what? Make America great again, right?
There you go, right? Work together and try and bring people together and bring people together around the truth and the facts of the matter, not necessarily only what they believe about those things.
Absolutely.
Right? All right. Well, thank you so much, David Cuellar from the University of Arizona School of Journalism. It's been a good show, and they'll be back tomorrow with the Friday Roundtable. I think Dan Shearer is hosting again. And I hope you guys all have a good day. Again, this is Ray Allen filling in for Bill Buckmaster on the Buckmaster Show tomorrow morning. Wake up Tucson, 6 to 9. And then Buckmaster will be here back at noon. Not him, but Dan Shearer. And Mike Check with Mike Shaw. I'll be on the other side of the glass today at 4. See you then.